Hello and welcome to Real Geeks Presents The B-Roll. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
What's going on, Internet? I'm just going to have a couple of quick production notes before we get moving.
Production notes! Watch out, they will bore you to tears and frustrate me forever.
Well, first and foremost, I'm going to tell you right now, next week's B-Roll is most definitely going to be delayed.
Delays! Yeah, no. I look for the schedule to be, to what?
Pretty much, yeah. I have a workshop next Thursday, so I can't record. But first, if those of you who have been watching the show when we were on YouTube, or have at least gone back since we started on the podcast and maybe ventured into the video episodes, first and foremost, for most of them, I'm sorry. But you may remember from, I think, episode, it was either 43 or 48. I can't remember which, but it was one of those.
Jesus Christ.
Our review of the film Becky and how happy that thing made me and how much I have been praying for a sequel. And Deadline.com is reporting it's happening.
It's coming true. Finally, the world does not suck for you. It's coming true. Yes, your greatest dreams. It's Becky, too.
Yeah, the only thing that I don't have right now, anyway, is a release date, however.
Or a plot summary, or who else is in it, or
Well,
wait. Oh, no, really?
Kind of, sort of.
Okay, hit me.
According to Deadline, Becky 2, The Wrath of Becky, which is possibly my favorite title in all of cinema, was written and directed by Matt Angel and Suzanne Coote, and was directed by... Okay, I lost track of who the director was, so we'll get there later. Essentially, just prior to this new film, Becky's been living off the grid for a couple of years until she encounters essentially another white supremacist, this time played by Sean William Scott.
Which, like, okay, I can see that. But, and this is the only time in at least... so far my life, and presumably my life going forward, that I will ever say this, but it's a damn shame that Kevin James's character was killed in the first one, because it'd be great to contrive a way to have him come back, like, I'm his twin brother. Okay, I don't care. You were fantastic in that one film, Kevin James. We finally found the reason you exist, and now that it's in the past... what are you doing?
No, it would have been lovely if he could have come back, or someone from his gang had survived.
Yeah, and I assume that there'll be some sort of connection, and it'll make sense. You know, they'll tie it back in. And of course, very interested to see what the new group can do with it. And, you know, it's less a swerve. I can see it too easily. It's like if they make Jason Lee some kind of, like, you know, dirtbag sleazebag. You know, it's just, yeah. And it's been done. I don't know. That was the great thing about having Kevin James as a violent white supremacist the first time. Is like, I'm sorry, no. This guy is Paul Blart Mall Cop. This does not make sense. You would have to, like, cast... you probably can't get Tom Hanks money for this. But what about Colin Hanks? Like, have Colin Hanks just suddenly throwing up, like, Sieg Heils and shit. And you're just, oh my god, I'm disturbed. And not Chet Hanks, because, again, you could see it. You could see Chet Hanks suddenly swerve into, like, white supremacists. I have been rejected from my use of patois. I will now become horrible even more.
All right. First off, I'm going to redo the plot part because I found the right paragraph and my eyes are not blurring when I'm looking at the screen now.
Oh, well, that's good.
So according to Deadline, prior to the events of the recently wrapped new chapter, Becky has been living off the grid for 2 years. She then finds herself going toe-to-toe against Daryl, played by Sean William Scott, the leader of a fascist organization on the eve of an organized attack. So apparently, I guess this time around, Becky will now be a one-team counter-terrorism unit.
I kind of like the idea that they've managed to... When the Punisher has been taken away from you and the imagery has been weaponized by the right, you just remake the Punisher, but
yeah.
As a teenage girl, just, yeah, fuck you then.
Well, and also, I can't remember if this was Junk Food Cinema or oneofus.net, but I do remember hearing one of them pointing out how every time a Punisher movie is made, another movie comes out after it that is basically a Punisher movie, but better than the actual Punisher movie.
Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah. It's the great blight and plight and slight of Punisher. It only works in the comics. You do that shit in films and everyone goes, yeah, but what about this? And it's yeah. Like, ah, fuck. Damn yeah. It. You're right. Shut up.
And now with Becky too here, like I said in the opening here, I am just downright giddy, but I'm also kind of nervous about it. Because the plot line, it feels like that old studio logic of, okay, we're gonna take everything everybody loved about the first movie and we're just gonna do the same thing again.
This is very true. The thing is, that can work, and it cannot work.
Yeah.
Like, Top Gun Maverick was, in many ways, shot for shot even, the exact same film. That is doing really well. It continues to kick ass. The Force Awakens was more or less Star Wars again.
Yeah, and it was...
Of the sequel trilogy, it's the least combative.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And
it could be done. It's
it can totally be done.
I hope it's not boring.
I
hope it's done. Yeah. It's ratcheted up in the right way.
Exactly. And another thing that's kind of making me nervous is the only person from the first movie coming back, at least in on camera, on set capacity, is Lulu Wilson. Like Nick Morris, who wrote the first one, he's not on this one. John Millett and Carrie Mernion, the directors of the first one, they're not coming back as the directors.
See, I could see this becoming one of those grindhouse series where you cut your teeth on it.
Yeah.
With a good idea, and you move on after that. And it just becomes something that constantly gets pumped out. It's, it's never high quality. It's essentially like subpar Rambo. But I look forward to the next one where she's somehow in a tower and has to escape the tower. As a great... kind of segue. I believe you sent me the trailer for The Princess,
Yes.
That's what it's called. Yeah, and it's just like, it's just another tower film, but you swapped out the character descriptions. It's smart, and I can see how they could apply it to Becky as well. Just like, yeah, now she's in a tower movie. How will she get out of this tower? Oh, dear. It's full of white supremacists. So many Nazis in this one tower. You won't believe the square foot to Nazi ratio. most Nazis per square foot of any film since Saving Private Ryan.
Okay, good. I did save the Princess Trailer article. And now, like with all that stuff that is making me nervous about the movie, at the same time, as much as Nick Morris and everybody are not coming back to actually work on the movie, they've all put their name on it as producers. So I read that and I'm going, okay, if they have enough faith in this to put their names on the movie,
yeah,
then that, to me, that's reassuring.
Yeah, no, that's good. So long as Alan Smithy does not show his fucking face,
we should be
all right. Yeah, it's fine. It's good. At the very least, they're not ashamed to take the paycheck. and so it can't be that bad.
No, and with Nick Morris anyway, I did get a chance to talk to him at HalCon last year. And side note, Nick, my apologies. You haven't seen the interview yet because we seem to have kind of misplaced the file.
We're still looking for that because, God damn it, are you fucking kidding me?
Right?
Are you fucking kidding me?
One thing that I did get coming out of that was he clearly loves this character.
Mm.
And I don't think, I think if this was a bad script, I don't think he would put his name on it.
Yeah. No, I get the feeling that it's too early in its franchise history to shit the bed. Someone has a good idea. Sean William Scott is very talented and entertaining, and he'll probably bring a charming likability to the villain that will make watching it enjoyable, all the same as watching Kevin James somehow steal the show in a film where I literally went in going, are you fucking kidding me? No, this has got to be a pile of horse shit. And then it turned out to be quite rich manure upon which you spread on your flowers and they grow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was very nice. I look forward to Becky too.
Oh yeah. As they like, they surprised us once and I truly hope that they can do it again.
Yeah.
Now, with that, next up, I did originally cut this for time, but since you brought it up and I've been able to track the article back down, let's talk about that trailer for The Princess.
Yes. Rudimentary as fuck, but essentially the same premise as Shrek. In the sense of, like, the original Shrek, not Shrek as it became a marketing monster, but just take one of the basic presumptions about fairy tales that Disney, which Fox, or whatever, 20th Century is now a part of, and you simply run it through the ironic logic machine until you reach something like, you know, the action comedy Shrek, or in this case, an action comedy Tower film in which a princess decides to get herself out of her predicament, imprisoned by a presumably evil count or evil prince or what have you. And instead of waiting for the dashing heroes to save the day, she just says, fuck it, and fights her way from the tallest tower to what appears to be everyone literally waiting in the courtroom to the courtyard to see if she does it, which is one of those aspects of, I truly do hope everyone's just like, I mean, we'll see if she comes down. Jester, tell us a tale while we wait. Minstrels play. And you can hear in the background, bam, 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 bam.
Oh, yeah, like quite frankly, as much as you bring up the Shrek comparison, for me, the way this trailer starts out, it had me thinking more like a live-action Brave.
Ah, yes. And I think that's as well, you know, because this does come from the umbrella of Disney, that idea is intentional. This likely began as a story note. Like, this was a concept where Brave just didn't follow through on, because it's like, oh, well, we don't have time for this sequence. We're cutting it. Or, we had this concept originally when we conceived of it, but the story went in another direction. The character went in another direction. As well, see Tangled. Like,
yeah,
this is Tangled, but with punching.
Yeah, like...
More punching.
This starts out as a live-action Brave, and then there's a point where... I think about halfway through the trailer, Joan Jett's I Don't Give a Damn About My Reputation kicks in. And it's like Quentin Tarantino just grabbed the reins, and this trailer loses its goddamn mind.
It's definitely the kind of wonderful medievalist flip that, when it works, you get A Knight's Tale. And when it doesn't, you get Robin Hood. Oh, I wish Vita was here. No!
I would like to note once again, I stand by the 4 out of 5 that I gave Robin Hood. And quite simply, if you wanted to start watching Arrow, but you don't have time to do the entire first season, Robin Hood will give you season 1 of Arrow in about 90 minutes.
Oh, it's depressing how true that is.
Oh,
you have filed this city.
Starring Joey King as our titular warrior princess, the movie also stars Dominic Cooper, Olga Kurylenko, and Veronica, I'm going to guess it's pronounced no, N-G-O, I have no idea if the G is silent. Anyway. I don't know. When a beautiful, strong-willed princess refuses to wed the cruel sociopath to whom she is betrothed, she is kidnapped and locked in a remote tower of her father's castle. With her scorned, vindictive suitor intent on taking her father's throne, the princess must protect her family and save the kingdom.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as we've said, it's basically the plot of every Disney princess movie ever. But
yeah, it's that segment from Monty Python and the Holy Grail when Lancelot storms the castle and rescues the idiot prince, and then like there's a large discussion about huge tracts of land, except played more straight. It's just the same thing. Storm the castle. In this case, storm the castle from within. Fight off the idiot who is really just looking for a sound investment, and get the fuck out of there.
Now, but if that is your thing, but the medieval equivalent of 70s martial arts movies with a whole lot of blood are also your thing, the movie is set to debut July 1st, and make no mistake, just to note, it is an R-rated movie. On Hulu in the United States and Disney Plus everywhere else. And
I do think we are going to have to cover this because I want to cover this and do a double bill of It and Dread, because it's kind of the same film. I want to look at Tower Films.
Totally fair. To be perfectly honest, after seeing this trailer, I will happily take any excuse to cover it.
Yeah, because it's a silly, silly, willy, billy schlock. Yeah.
Speaking of silly Billy schlock, and a story that is so stupid that apparently my Mac is not going to reload the article.
Rejection. Rejected.
I am half convinced that Sony Pictures is like the Florida man of film studios.
Yes, I believe firmly at this point that their decisions are made either by chance or intentionally done wrong as a joke, or there is a tremendous pile of communal cocaine that anyone who is an employee of the company is allowed to have access at. Like, if this is day one for you at Sony Pictures, congratulations. The executive bathrooms are for earners, but have at the coke.
Now, I think the cocaine theory does have a certain bit of weight to it, because this is another, I originally wasn't going to do this story, but then they did something else that made me want to bring this back, which is the simple fact that Sony Pictures is now the first studio that I have ever seen have the same movie bomb twice.
That was delightful. I mean, it was hell watching Twitter just vomit constant Morbius for a couple of months. Like, shut the fuck up. Please, God, shut the fuck up. Please, shut these people the fuck up. But I will admit, it was entirely worth it when Sony, the dumbest bastards in all of Hollywood, saw all of that, and instead of going, oh, we made a film so terrible that the internet is laughing at it for months, which is impressive, you, for some reason, thought that people wanted it to be re-released and seen in theaters, and so you spend so much money and you convince theaters to put it out there, and someone's ticket is on the line. Like, someone paid a hell of a lot of money for that. I hope it wasn't the individual theaters. I hope it was Sony, because fuck them. But if it was the individual theaters who are already struggling, then this is a very sad tale of a studio making a very stupid goddamn decision, because once again, they misunderstood how to read social media.
Yeah, and quite simply, they, I guess from all the memes and so forth, got the impression that the movie was now popular and had achieved some degree of cult status.
And I can understand exactly how this happens. My job is literally, I'm a social media specialist. And if you look at traffic figures without context, you will make bad decisions. Bad decisions will be made if you simply focus on what is the most popular, what is getting the most hits. And for a time, the most popular piece of IP Sony had online was Morbius. And it couldn't have made sense when they looked at the profit line. And they didn't seem to contextualize the kind of traffic that they're getting in terms of, like, say, just looking at it and having someone who engages in it explain it to them. And so they ended up making a really bad investment. And, you know, Morbius traffic has again peaked.
Yeah.
Despite the cost that this has been and the lack of profit, because, of course, everyone is laughing at them. So, you know what, Sony? Morbius traffic has never been higher. Maybe you should release it a third time.
Yeah, and
always look at the context of your traffic. Always. Yes. Yeah. Always.
And, yeah, I mean, a third re-release, like, why not? Because, I mean, this time around, It made a glorious, highly successful $300,000.
Oh, yeah. Oh, rake it in, baby. That's Marvel money, baby.
Oh, but nobody panic. And speaking of Marvel money, in a move that you've got to assume is solely because of how badly Morbius stumbled again, they are now re-releasing Spider-Man No Way Home.
Oh, wow. You know, I thought you were going to say Venom. I literally thought you were going to say Venom. Because, like, okay, Spider-Man No Way Home, we might have to pay some money to Disney. Fuck. Shit, fuck. But if we just throw Venom back out there and we only release the posters that were in China, like mainland China's boyfriend Venom posters, we don't translate any of it. We put a Showtime at the bottom, and that would actually have made more money than Morbius section releasing. recut some of the trailers to the original. No, actually, don't even recut them. It has been done. Go to YouTube, find the best romantic comedy recuts of the Venom trailer. Pay the people who made those obscene amounts of money relative to how much money they make. Trust me, $10,000 should be about it. And then just put those out there. With a release date, people will fucking flock to see the same film. You wouldn't even have to change the fucking movie.
Oh, well,
people would flock to it.
Ironically enough, it sounds like with the Spider-Man re-release, they have changed the movie because this is Spider-Man No Way Home. I believe the more fun stuff edition.
The more fun stuff? Edition?
Yeah.
What was it, have like twice the Oreo filling? What the fuck does that mean?
I don't know, but I would assume that it's basically just going to be more scenes of Toby, Andrew, and Tom Holland.
Ah, sweet cutting room floor scrapings. Delicious.
Because, of course, social media also went nuts over the three of them.
Yeah.
And that logic worked out in 300,000 beautiful ways the last time Sony tried that.
I mean, at the very least, the social media response to that was valid, legit, and I want to say like 95%. Fawning adoration and near sexual desire. People truly, truly love that. And so, yeah, like Snyder cut your fucking Toby cut, whatever Garfield cut crap. Yeah, I could see some people going stupid for that. Them and their parasocial relationships with their Spider-Mans. It's just, you know what I love in a film personally? Pacing. And when the pacing doesn't get thrown off because the actors have some really gee whiz bang on fantastic dialogue that does nothing for the storyline. Hey, I love director's cuts as much as anything, but do we need to spend 20 minutes at this French colonial villa? Again?
Yeah. No, like, I enjoyed the banter between the three of them as much as anyone else, but there is such thing as too much of a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, Sony, we've already seen the movie.
Also, okay, one, they're probably going to force the Vulture in there somehow to try connect. Like, there's gonna be a goddamn connection to the Morbius Venom verse. But this is Sony cutting the extras into the film. fuck pacing. This is going to be just sloppy. No way in hell it's going to match. Like, they're going to stand yeah. out. I hope it's obnoxious. Like, the color grading is just all the shit. No, that's clearly a green screen behind them. How can you tell? Because it's green, and it's a screen.
Oh, if they just full-on velocipastored those extra scenes, that I would go to the theater for.
I would definitely watch. Like, that's the thing. There are a couple of films I would literally watch a working cut of
yeah.
because it would be fucking hilarious. I would love if for, say, the 10th anniversary of Endgame, like Infinity War and Endgame, they released the working cuts to theaters of both of them. 3 hours and whatever long each. And it's just green screen, green screen, green screen, green screen, flip book, story boarding, animatics, all of that delightful, incomplete nonsense. Oh. I want stand-in music. I want to hear stand-in music.
Oh, and, but oh no! Like if that happened, the entire MCU social media fandom. The stands would just be jumping off bridges, like because do you remember? Do you remember that stinger at the end of I think Infinity War where it was that extra Hulk scene where they didn't finish the CGI and people just lost it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like imagine what would happen if it was that. Over an entire movie.
Like, we could have such fun. So much goddamn fun. But no. No. We have liners and bitches and moaners and groaners. Oh, God, I love being a nerd. Except for everyone else in this goddamn
yeah.
pop culture fandom.
Just to wrap this up, I will say... first, at the very least, the Morbius fans are better than the Snyder Bros. They did the same.
Granted.
They did the same thing the Snyder Bros did, but did it without being bullying assholes.
I mean, this is true, and they were far more efficient about it. I mean, they got turnaround in months rather than years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And to the best of my knowledge, weren't like they never painted themselves as heroes. They were always a bunch of fucking idiots trying to get Morbius back up.
And
I can't believe it's Morbin time.
And just the second note that I wanted to leave us on here was to Sony Pictures and any film studio within the sound of my voice. You don't decide if a film is a cult classic. We do. We make that happen, not you. So stop. And next up, this is going to be downright amazing because I have one more trailer that we're going to go from that straight into more talk about representation. And if that's a problem for you, I don't fucking care. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but the trailer for the live-action remake of Pinocchio was recently released.
Yeah, and, like, you know, as you said, we'll get into a thing that's like, oh, I can immediately see where people are going to have a problem with this. Otherwise, you're watching it going, ah, yes, another live-action Disney classic remake. Why are we still doing these? And I know why. Yeah. It's for the IP. It's for the protection of the IP. And to make more money. But it's just like... at no point is this going to change the story of Pinocchio.
No, it's not.
Yep, there's Pinocchio. Yep, there's the whale. Yep. Yeah, you're all a bunch of assholes. Yep.
Now, also, like... I don't know if this works for or against it, but this is actually going straight to Disney Plus.
I think that'll work for it.
Yeah.
Mulan didn't do very well in theaters, and I think they understand that they have a better potential with these specific IP, because, like, people grew up watching the cartoons at home, like the original cartoons at home as a family in their living room, in their bedroom, whatever. And so that's the culture of seeing them. The culture of watching Pinocchio is not going to the movie theater and seeing it. This isn't 1970 or 1960 or whenever the hell it would have gotten replayed or released, or, you know, like the way that movies used to get replayed. They, oh my God, Pinocchio is coming back.
Yeah.
It's been years. Let's go see it in the theater. No, you rented that shit. You had it on VHS in those big puffy white packages, or you got them on DVD when they released it from the Disney Vault.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, remember when the Disney Vault was a thing?
Yeah, yeah, before it got blown up by terrorists. But the thing is, like, yeah, you watch these movies at home.
Yeah,
that is the culture of them, and so releasing it on Disney Plus is so much smarter because it's relying on that culture. That's how you play on the modern nostalgia for something like Pinocchio.
Yeah, and now, just very quickly, Academy Award winner Robert Zemeckis directs this live-action retelling of the beloved tale of a wooden puppet who embarks on a thrilling adventure to become a real boy. Tom Hanks stars as Geppetto.
It's-a me, Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Doing a Borat.
Like, I would have been perfectly fine with this casting because, I mean, it's Tom Hanks. This should be the safest actor choice you could possibly make. But I've seen the trailers for that Elvis Baz Luhrmann pick. And I don't know.
I am very entertained by that. The trailer for the Baz Luhrmann Elvis pick. I am looking forward to that like you don't fucking believe. And the idea of him playing that slimy piece of shit agent, the colonel, that's going to be good. But yeah,
yeah,
this is weird. This is out there. This is kind of like, I understand what you're going for, but honestly, if you had decided inexplicably to, like, put Al Pacino there instead, it would have still been weird, but it might have worked better. It's just Tom Hanks, just it's weird. He's doing a very, and like his accent is very close to what Geppetto was in the original cartoon, but that original cartoon was very, very mid-century Disney bullshit. Like,
yeah,
that was a bad accent to begin with.
Yeah.
And now you've got Tom Hanks doing it, and it's like, okay then. Okie dokie.
Yeah, you hear his Colonel Parker in the Baz Luhrmann film, and it's like, I think he's trying to do a Southern accent, but for some reason he's grabbed like four other accents, thrown all of them into a blender, and is trying to do all of them at once.
Now, to be fair, that was Colonel Parker. Like,
okay,
he sounded like that. And so he is doing an incredible Colonel Parker, but that was, like, the allure and magnetism of Colonel Parker is, like, you're just like, what in the fuck is with this guy? But it doesn't work here.
No.
It's so weird. It's so weird.
To continue, Pinocchio is being played by Benjamin Evan Ainsworth, who may be a newcomer. I don't know. I don't know the name.
I don't know who you are.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Jiminy Cricket, which, I mean,
sure,
I'm good with that.
Just all right. All right. That makes, it's not who I initially would have cast, but there's nothing going off in my head like, no, don't do it.
Yeah.
I like that Jiminy Cricket in this looks like Jiminy.
Yeah.
They have, like, of everything in it, they seem to have updated him most directly. Though with Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing, I would actually have been more entertained if it was a tiny Joseph Gordon-Levitt riding around, like, you know, dressed just like Jiminy Cricket, and he's got like the umbrella. He's like holding on to Pinocchio as Pinocchio's like riding the whale. It's just Joseph Gordon-Levitt like, ah, hold it. You know, it's like, yes, oh God, this is wonderful. Just, you better listen to your conscience, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And he just like puts him under a glass. It's great.
Oh, and I mean, the only thing there is, make no mistake, the purists would lose their damn minds.
The fuck purist.
Hey.
They're purist of a Disney version of a story. Fuck off.
Hold that thought for about 10 seconds. Because where I'm going to stop the cast list is at Academy Award nominee Cynthia Erivo as the Blue Fairy. Cynthia Erivo is also a woman of color. And yeah, once it came out that she was the Blue Fairy, you can guess what happened.
Everyone agreed that she looked radiant in the final shot of this, and it stands out above everything else in this otherwise humdrum and what the fuck are you doing, Tom Hanks looking trailer.
Okay, apparently maybe you can't guess what happened.
I am a very naive person.
Yeah. Even the Disney classic fandom is apparently racist.
Wait, are you telling me Disney adults are problematic? Well, this is the first I've ever heard of that.
Yeah. Oh,
there can be rude people in Florida?
But what? But the blue fairy was white in the original
movie.
Next
thing you'll tell me, there's dickheads in Anaheim.
How could they cast a woman of color to play a white character?
By presumption would be by making a decision based on performance capability. She was the better actress for it.
Oh, no, we can't do that. It has to be the exact same thing over and over and over.
You know, I'm surprised that they don't ask for, like, rotoscoping of this stuff, really.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sitting on the line of, like, I just don't see the point of remaking these aside from money and to re-up the IP come copyright rollback. I look at it as purely realistic. Therefore, when it comes to, like, if you're making changes, okay, go ahead. Who gives a fuck? Like, do whatever you want. Update it however you want. It's your product. You're intentionally rebranding it so that you can hold on to it for another few decades. Do whatever. You know, being a purist about it is so goddamn stupid, especially when the entire point of it is, in a couple of years, you're going to be able to, like, possibly legally own that copy that you are so pure about. If you truly need the Blue Fairy to be white, and by the way, she's blue.
Yeah.
It's in the fucking name. If you truly need your Blue Fairy to be blonde hair along with those blue eyes, just wait a couple decades and then you can own Pinocchio outright. Copyright free. You'll have it. You can do whatever you want with it. You can make fucking products with the Blue Fairy on it. You can turn it into your little fucking personal Hitler, you weird bastards. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Just shut the fuck up. It just makes no sense.
No, it really doesn't.
It makes no sense. Nothing has been changed of your classic. If you don't want to watch it, don't watch it. No one is going back and re-editing anything.
No, you would think that would be simple, and yet here we fucking are.
Yeah. No, it's It's just so goddamn stupid. It's endlessly fucking dumb. Things get updated constantly. That's human society and progress. Get over it. And then they complain on machines that are constantly updated and using technology that is constantly updated. Yeah. It's the same goddamn process. And they accept it unquestionably in one aspect and vilify it horribly in another. It's just, shut the fuck up. It's so goddamn boring. If a film is not good, then the film is not good. If the performances in it are weird, then the performances are weird. Let it live or die on its own merits instead of constantly turning it into a culture war.
Yeah, like,
oh, that must be so exhausting.
I mean, like the simple fact is that, like you said, Disney is making this to protect the IP, and because they know it's a safe money bet.
Yeah, and now they own two versions of that character. That's how you make money, you assholes.
Yeah,
would you like to make money with them? Buy Disney stock, you pricks.
I mean, we know that that's why they're doing this.
Yeah.
A whole shit ton of people would happily pay money to see this based on the track record of every Disney live action remake ever.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I haven't enjoyed many of them because it's just like, I can go watch the original and be happier. But I'm not going to pretend that a lot of people didn't love the fuck out of them and they didn't make bajillions of dollars.
And Disney knows that. So if you're going to bitch about the fact that the fairy in Pinocchio is now being played by a woman of color, make no mistake, your opinion does not matter.
And I just need you to understand, as global warming wrecks the world, as white supremacy is on the verge of overthrowing democracy, you have decided to complain about a fairy in a live-action fairy tale movie. Your life is truly one of, like, laid-back, idle splendor and ignorance. That this is what you focus on.
Now, and as long as we're talking representation and mocking people that are against it.
Yay.
Now, you remember that story that came out a few weeks ago, that opinion piece by David Marcus about how Star Trek was too woke and that it's like just getting into like woke politics now?
Yes. Yes.
And like, specifically how David Marcus, and I'm going to keep saying the name because it's just going to be funny to me every time. His opinion piece, he had specifically listed how in the third season finale of Star Trek Discovery, they had Georgia gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams as the president of United Earth, and how Star Trek Strange New Worlds in its premiere revealed that the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol led to a civil war in the United States, which, let's be honest, it almost did.
Yeah, and it still might.
It very well still might.
As of this recording, I want to say 5 to 6 hours ago, a white supremacist militia was arrested as they were U-hauling into position. And the Walk for Life almost had a stampede because someone charged the stage shouting they had a gun. I mean, America's on the verge. There have been hundreds of mass shootings this year alone in America. Hundreds. So show me on the doll where America isn't in the middle of a bloody civil war.
As much as Ted Cruz and people like him want to say otherwise, I'm sorry, America is the bulk barn of mass shootings.
Jesus Christ.
It sounds terrible. I feel awful for saying it.
All I could see is just like a bin full of handguns, and you're scooping it with one of those plastic scoops and putting it in a plastic bag and then weighing it. Oh, that's 5 pounds of gun there. It's not on sale. I should put some back.
Like, the joke is insensitive as fuck, and I will own that. But at the same time, when they've had like 3 or 4 mass shootings in the same day, I'm not wrong. Same day.
Yeah. Just endlessly fucking. And that's the thing. It's to the point of like, when you see them make a big deal out of one, you're like, okay, but next week you're going to completely forget about this. And at the same time that they're making a big deal out of that one, you know for a fact that there are like 2 to 5 other ones every day that like just aren't going to get that much coverage because like, well, this thing's getting the coverage. So yours doesn't get, like, you might have gotten coverage if this hadn't happened, but this gets the coverage. And yeah, it's essentially the same issue, but yours gets ignored. It's like, Jesus Christ, that is messed up, America. Where mass shootings get ignored only because they're not the sexiest mass shooting, traffic-wise, that you can talk about at that moment. Oh, God, what in the hell is happening next door? Why?
Yeah.
Stop it.
Well, on the plus side, Strange New Worlds is apparently continuing its trend of telling conservatives to go fuck themselves because the series has cast trans non-binary actor Jesse James Keitel in a guest starring role as a non-binary character in next week's episode. They will be playing Dr. Aspen, who apparently used to be a counselor for Starfleet, but was moved to change careers after witnessing the realities of the Federation border. Dr. Aspen will apparently share their screen time with Spock and the work Ethan Peck is doing. I'm looking forward to seeing this. With whom Variety says the character will develop a, quote, surprising connection. And just because it lets me stick it to conservatives a little bit more, I will keep reading just to read Keitel's resume. Keitel can also be seen on ABC's Montana set mystery series Big Sky, where they play a former sex worker and kidnapping survivor who ends up working for the show's detective agency. Keitel's turn on the series broke new ground for non-binary actors, and outlets including NBC News have credited them as the first non-binary series regular played by a non-binary actor on network primetime. The actor is also set to play a main character named Ruthie in Peacock's upcoming Queer as Folk relaunch.
Neat.
And again, if you have a problem with that, fuck you.
I mean, at this point, you should really get used to it, because this is not the first, like, trans, non-binary performer on Star Trek, necessarily. I mean, like, Star Trek Discovery has 2 trans, non-binary characters. This is good. This is excellent. This is wonderful. Why are people still freaking out about this shit? This is what Star Trek is now. If you're just going to continue freaking out about this, maybe stop watching Star Trek. If you don't like chocolate ice cream, stop ordering chocolate ice cream. Try vanilla. Try pecan. Fucking try Moon Mist if you have that outside of the Maritimes. but sweet Jesus, stop picking chocolate and then going, ew, this is chocolate. This is too chocolatey. It's, yeah, no shit, asshole.
Yeah, exactly.
You're watching Star Trek. I'm sorry that Star Trek is being too futurist for you. Perhaps you should look at something that is less futurist than Star Trek, a show about the future. being a good place.
Like, I'm sorry, but the entire point of science fiction in general is to hold up a mirror to the world as it is and tell stories that reflect that. And guess what?
Sweet Jesus. By these people's complaints, oh, it's woke. Oh, it's injecting, politics into it. I mean, these are definitely the kind of people who you don't hear complaints about Peaky Blinders. Peaky Blinders is a show that is hyper masculine, very violent, very assertive masculine. But, and especially in the last season, it is very staunchly anti-fascist. It literally has a fascist as a villain, and the main characters, I think he begins and ends the season by going, "I'm going to fucking kill this bastard." And because the main character is so violently toxic masculine, you know that yes, he's going to, and it is going to be horrible and very satisfying. And that show is more progressive than the people who watch Star Trek and bitch and whine about representation.
Yeah.
It's like, listen, if Peaky Blinders is more on side than you are, you really gotta look at yourself. Like, step back and realize you're being a complete cunt.
Your father called the future the undiscovered country. People can be very frightened of change.
You've restored my father's faith.
And you've restored my son's.
You remember when we were talking about the trailer for Prey, and you were like, I hope that there's nobody speaking English.
Indeed.
Guess what?
Yeah.
As SlashFilm.com reported, Prey will give viewers the option to watch the film in the Comanche language.
That's a way. Like, I was swinging for the fences, assuming no one's going to Apocalypto this.
Yeah.
They need it to be a general audiences kind of thing. It's a Predator movie. Come on. But that they're giving you the option is fantastic, and I'm definitely going to take that at some point.
Oh yeah, no, I will absolutely take that opportunity as well, just for sheer curiosity.
Yeah. That's the thing. You don't necessarily have to do that super artistic move, that artistic integrity move, and have the film release perfect like that. You can appeal to the popular audience with a cut, the language is in the language that they expect and all of that stuff. But I love when a director does the blood and chrome versions of things, where it's if I truly had my way, here's how it would have been presented. It's entirely black and white, or entirely in Comanche. So give me that. Give me the option. So long as it doesn't cost the studio too much money, there should always be that option if it's available from the creative side.
Yeah, absolutely. And I apologize because I'm probably going to mispronounce this first name, but I think it's Jahane Myers. Jhane, who is a producer on Prey and is Comanche. And he was like, no, this is really important. We're doing this. This is a big thing. And I'm like, yes, and I will watch it. I want to support it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would hope that it's one of those things where if you put out the alternate version, maybe, just maybe, in 10, 20 years, it becomes the official version. It's the one that people actually watch. It's the one that everyone turns to. And I really hope that happens for this. First of all, I hope it's a film worth remembering and actually watchable. You know, number one, you got to stick the landing. But after that, I really hope that the Comanche version becomes the go-to. I hope it's like shot in that way where it's like, no. It really doesn't matter if you don't understand the lines or if you have to stop to read subtitles. Like if you pace it well enough, it doesn't matter. If you George Miller this well enough, you don't need dialogue. You can just have blood and chrome.
Yeah. Yeah, so, of course, the movie comes out, August 5th, and, I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll cover the fuck
out. Oh, yeah. Next up, did you see the teaser trailer for The Sandman?
Yes, I did. The teaser trailer that covers like the first third of the first issue of Sandman. Looks very pretty. I am very excited for all the casting news in it. If there is a more trailer than that, I have not seen it.
I don't think there's, the one that I have was the one that was announcing the release date on Netflix.
Okay, yeah, there's, I don't think I saw that one, unless it was at the end of the one that I'm thinking of. I'm very excited for it, but it's also one of those things where it's like, when it comes, it comes. I've been waiting for Sandman since 1997, I want to say. I am in no rush. It's been 25 years for me personally. I've got Amazon's fantastic part one and part two of Sandman on Audible. I have the entirety of Sandman in trade paperback. I've been biding my time.
No, I certainly don't blame you. Like, for me, as someone who isn't as familiar with Neil Gaiman's works as frankly I probably should be, I'm looking at this trailer and I'm going, okay, just the visuals, that is enough to bring me in.
And the visuals as they appeared, at least in what I saw, are very like very comic book accurate. Like, ooh, yes, that tracks. This is wonderful.
Oh yeah, like for me, I look at this, I'm going, I want a Mirror Mask remake as long as it's from these same people.
Ooh.
Right?
Potential.
And also with this trailer, you've created something that has made me interested in a Jenna Coleman role again.
Yeah. I forgot that Jenna's playing Joanna Constantine, isn't she?
Yeah.
That's gonna be fun. Joanna Constantine's a lot of fun. She initially was not at all connected to the character of John Constantine, and it just became a thing of like, yeah, but why wouldn't we? And it's like, okay, fine,
yeah,
fine, you dickholes, fine. And it's just, she's at oftentimes while she, her character appearance has been much more limited than John's, she can be more interesting because John falls into his faults constantly and Joanna is very competent.
And as I understand it, this is a result of they couldn't get the rights to use John.
It was complicated at the time because technically they were under the same press as like they were Vertigo DC, but they didn't want to use John necessarily at the time, and he had written it as somewhat like it was just a whole clusterfuck. But yeah, Joanna was and was not, like, she initially is not supposed to be, but also she's a replacement for John, but all, anyway, this is all like late 80s Vertigo editorial argument stuff.
Yeah.
And to keep in mind, like, oh, actually, this is pre-Vertigo, so this would be in just DC editorial nonsense. But keep in mind that as part of this very first story run, which was, I believe, 3 or 5 issues, Batman appears in it. Like, just outright Batman. They visit Batman.
Because, I mean, you know, why not?
Yeah, and Batman's like, I can't help with this. I'm sorry. And it would be great if they can, like, that's the thing. I can understand how in Amazon, like, John Constantine appears in the original comic book. It's not that there was, like, issues with him appearing. It's that in the way that Joanna Constantine originally appeared in certain flashback issues, that character was separate. But they're going to use her, I think, where John gets used in here.
Yeah.
It's because John and Batman and Swamp Thing and I think the Phantom Stranger and Dr. Fate all come into this. And it's like, no, we cannot have any of that happening. We're hitting exit on it. So I completely understand how, yeah, they'd have to swap out one character for another. It's a shame, though, that they didn't find a way of like, okay. We can't have John Constantine. Okay. Let me talk to you about Keanu. And just have Keanu's Constantine appear in that. And it's like, oh, okay. Keanu's Constantine is in Sandman. And the other Constantine is in DC. And Sandman universe is separate. Like, that would have been great of like, oh, you've retconned that weird Constantine. Why does Constantine look like that? Oh, it's the Sandman universe. Everyone looks like a fucking goth.
And speaking of Dr. Fate not being able to be in this, knowing DC, I would assume it's because of our last trailer, which is, of course, Black Adam.
Which, listen, number one, I love me the Justice Society.
Yeah.
I love me the Justice Society. I'm happy to see the Justice Society. I'm happy to see them in their full glory. There is no restraint there. It's full on. Like, wow, the Atom looks fantastic. Wow, Dr. Fate's helmet sure is shiny. You know, everything's there. Everything looks good. We're on track. That's good. Everything else about this trailer feels 10 years old or more. Like, superheroes don't kill anyone. Well, I do. A superhero who kills people? Who's ever heard of that? Like, I'm sorry. They should just be immediately like, yeah, and Superman kills people. What's your point? Oh, I thought this would have been a world where we're like, superheroes are heroic. No, fuck off, man.
Yeah, after the Snyderverse, that line just... No.
Yeah, and that film, this film has been in production so long that I completely understand why it has this feeling of it, because, like, it was supposed to essentially come out, I want to say, after Man of Steel, maybe after Batman versus Superman initially, and it was supposed to be, like, a counterpoint to heroics and all that. But it's like, no, the what Snyder did to DC was a counterpoint to heroics. He dragged it into the mud. And so, like, this just feels so weird. It feels like a film from either a decade ago, or it feels like a film from a different dimension.
Well, I think to go toward your counterpoint idea there, I know Black Adam was originally supposed to have debuted in Shazam, but they decided to do this movie with him instead.
But he was in production long before Shazam was. Like, I remember The Rock talking about this movie fucking back before BVS. Like, it
oh,
was...
Yeah. No, I know he's been talking about it for ages, but I know it took forever to get this thing off the ground.
Yeah, but like the initial script and when this was initially pitched, and I presume it seems based on the trailer, when they figured out the voice of this movie was like 2012. And it fucking shows. And, like, it's wonderful seeing Dr. Fate on screen, but golly, he does look an awful lot like a dime store Doctor Strange now, and especially since we've gotten so much Doctor Strange.
Yeah,
like, none of this is new now. We've gotten so much Doctor Strange. His last film was the Wanda movie. And the movie he was in before that was literally a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
Like, come the fuck on. This feels so... I'm not going to say too little too late because I don't know that's too little. It might blow me away. It might be great.
It might.
Maybe the Justice Society is fantastic in it. But it's so too late. It is so too late. So, like, this better be fan-fucking-tastic to make up for how late it is. This dinner is cold.
I actually just Googled when Black Adam started shooting. And according to Wikipedia, principal photography began on April 10th, 2021. Filming was delayed from an initial July 2020 start due to the COVID pandemic.
Oh, yeah, but pre-production, yeah. I'm talking about. Like, this has been in pre-production for the better part of a decade, and there are clear issues that you can see in the trailer because of that.
Well, I mean, and well, on my end, the biggest issue is this feels so much like the first Black Panther trailer.
That, too, where, yeah, you're supposed to feel like it matters that... The Rock is playing a superhero that a black man and a Samoan man is playing this character. And it's just like, yeah. But Captain America's black. And we have Black Panther. And it's just, it's been beaten to. They got to it first. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And like when I say that it feels like the Black Panther trailer, like there are shots in this trailer, like with that shot with that plane or with that panel opening up and somebody jumping out the bottom of the plane that I swear I actually saw in Black Panther. The use of the rap song in the trailer.
It does feel, like... It's not only dated in one aspect, it's what's chasing feels dated.
Yeah.
I mean, this will come out chasing the tail of Black Panther 1 just in time for Wakanda Forever to come out and just redefine it and be like, no, go fuck yourselves. This is bullshit. Fuck off.
And also, it kills me to say this because... of how I will normally give the utmost respect when an actor gets to do their passion project. The Rock is kind of a problem for me here. And I think a lot of it is how with versions of Black Adam I've seen in the past, I'm so used to that thick Middle Eastern style accent.
Hmm.
And he's not doing that here at, like, he's not even trying to sound different at all.
No, he doesn't. He's, like, he gave more to the Scorpion King.
Yeah, I think...
Which is essentially the same fucking character, by the way. I mean,
yeah.
I want to assert that you can watch the original Scorpion King movie, not The Mummy 2, the Scorpion King... And then follow it up with Black Adam and be like, this is the same character. No, like, legit. Like, tell a child, this is the same character. You want to watch a movie about Black Adam? I'll show you a prequel about Black Adam.
Yeah.
To show him the Scorpion King.
Yeah, like, there's the same movie feel there. And also, let's be honest, whenever the Kratos God of War film happens, just take everything The Rock is doing here, digitally insert it straight into the God of War movie, and it's, again, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. And, like, yeah, everything about this feels so dated. They should have done Black Adam as part of Captain Marvel / Shazam 2. Like, he should have been the big bad who becomes a semi-ally / anti-hero they can rely on against a bigger force like Mr. Mind or something. Like, God. DC, stop trying to make supervillains the protagonists. If you want them to be co-protagonists, do that. Make them interesting within, like, the typical structure that they're in. Stop trying to make them the heroes. It's boring.
Yeah, I mean, look at how Sony has been doing, because they've been trying to do the same damn thing with Spider-Man's entire supporting cast, and look at how that's working for them.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you look at how Disney has handled it, and it's like, okay, they gave Loki his own show, but that was after going through an entire character arc in which, to be very clear, Loki dies. We see the end of his story. We see how it begins. He's a child, you know, a foundling baby, and we see where it ends. And then, to explore that narrative, we get an offshoot that doesn't affect that narrative, that concluded narrative we have. So there is the perfect Loki who lived, fought, and died, and that story still exists, and now we have one outside that who can relate to that perspective and other perspectives. That's how you do it. You don't just go, oh, here's a cool supervillain who we could also make into a protagonist, and we're going to give him his own story arc, even though, because he's supposed to be a supervillain, you're not supposed to empathize with him in this way, because when we eventually have to use him, we're going to misuse that, and you're totally going to, like, get some fucking weird Anakin vibes off of this, and that's why people are so goddamn, like, leather daddy issue about Vader. It's been weird watching people be like, you can't have Hayden Christensen do this. It's like, he's the bad guy, you assholes. It's the same problem. It's the same problem. If you try to make your bad guy too likable, you can't use him as a bad guy. Or when it does, it suddenly shifts and you go, what the fuck happened? And it just feels badly done. Learn to use them within the stories of the good guys.
In the great hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman. Wonder Woman. Batman. Aquaman. And those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Thank you so much for listening to Real Geeks The B-Roll. I have been Crash and Burn. He has been Mike Montgomery. Please, if you enjoyed, like, share, and subscribe, or contact us for comments. Give us your comments. Send your comments. Where do they send those comments?
Well, you can reach us via email at realgeekshfx@gmail.com. Or on Twitter at RealGeeksHFX. And yes, comments, questions.
Comments.
Tell us all for stuff. I don't care. I would just love to have things to respond to.
Comments.
And hang around if you want to hear a little bit extra and it doesn't upset you to hear things that are a little horrible, nasty. Terrible, terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until then, thank you very much for listening and goodbye.
See ya.